Conversation Show, the first episode for 2023, the first regular episode for a while. I'm Liam and I'm recording this on Ngunnawal land.
I'm Lisa and I'm on Darkinyal.
And I'm Leanne and I'm on Wiradjuri land.
Well, Leanne, Lisa, welcome back to a regular episode. We were dragged back for an end of year review episode last year and we did promise that we would come back for a regular sort of series of adventures, and here we are. How are you both?
Listen to it?
I think so. I think, well,
We just had fun anyway, didn't we?
Yeah,
so
precisely.
Well, at least I listened to it because I edited it.
You did too. A few people rang me after the last one and said it was so good to hear your voice again.
Oh, that's nice. Well, thank you, whoever's listening. That's awesome.
So I think our plan is we'll be sticking to our sort of schedule before we took our big hiatus. So we'll have fortnightly episodes. I think it'll be the usual mix of banter. We'll try and get some interviews and particular things. But yes, it does feel like a big year for early education. So it would have been, like, I probably would have been talking to you both about it anyway. So it would have been strange then not to record it and put it out for everyone else to listen to as well.
For sure.
So our first episode back, we, like I said, there is a lot of things we could be looking at. So I think you'll be expecting episodes on things like the new early years learning framework. We're investigating that in a pretty big way here at Northside, where I'm actually in a Northside office where I'm recording this today with our five early childhood centres. So we'll definitely be having a look at that. The Productivity Commission has announced another inquiry into the early childhood system. So Leanne, I know obviously you're very, very, very excited by that.
Well, I have to say, Liam, the wonderful thing is that Deb Brennan is leading that. So it's the only time I'd be fully convinced that we need another one.
We also obviously have, well, there's an ACNC or ACCC, sorry, inquiry into the sector that's also happening. Lisa, you're obviously going to be doing the submissions for the podcast for all of these. So thank you very, very much.
Hang on, the podcast just does podcasts. If it wants to submit an episode as a submission, we can do a transcript of the podcast. That's as far as it goes.
Nice. I'm really interested in the ACCC component of all of these bigger sort of election promises. I think that's the one, even though I'm committed and feel like I can actually contribute to the others, I'm very interested in what happens with this and how surprising it may be for particular stakeholders.
I just hope that it really shows that one of the things that's inflating costs is landlords and developers. That would be a great outcome.
Yeah, definitely.
We might have to turn the podcast over one episode to any economists we know who are near and dear to us. To do that episode.
Great idea.
So yes, to stay tuned for that. But we thought we'd kind of ease back into recording and doing, and you know, and for the listeners out there, we're going to start with the federal government's early years strategy. Now, we'll sort of preface all this by saying there's not a huge amount of information out there at the moment, but one of the reasons I think we wanted to tackle this early is that the survey feedback for this is due actually pretty soon. So it's due on the 3rd of March, and there is public submissions will be available until the 30th of April. So I think a lot of organisations and people will be going through that process. But one of the missions of this podcast since way back in 2016, if we can remember that back that far, was encouraging activism and encouraging involvement in these kind of things. So I think we wanted to get an episode out while there's still time to contribute. But we might start with just a little bit of background before we talk about, I think in terms of what we want to talk about will be, I guess, the context. So where this early years strategy is sitting in terms of all the other things that are happening in the political space right now. I guess from the three of us, what we would like to see from an early years strategy, and then our recommendations, I guess, for advocacy for people involved, and our helpful advice to the government, which I know they very, very much appreciate. But in terms of backgrounds and context, I think it is, look, as we sort of said at the intro, the federal government, they are doing a lot. I think the Labor government, they're not sort of resting on their laurels and a whole bunch of stuff. And a lot of that is affecting early education. We've had some legislative change to the CCS system. We've got the hideously named cheaper childcare starting in July, but they have, you know, to be fair to them, over the last several years, they have hinted pretty interestingly at things like exploring a universal access approach to early education, which the Productivity Commission will be tackling, and we're going to talk about that in detail in a future episode. But this strategy is more about looking at trying to create a broader approach to the early years, and that, as they sort of say on the site, you know, supporting the education, well-being and development of Australia's children. I do think it's, you know, it's worth acknowledging, you know, having another strategy is always a double-edged sword, because it's, you know, it's, you know, it can often be a bit of paper that sort of, and it tries to bring things together. It isn't always successful. But for me, we've never really had something like this in Australia, or at least, you know, since we've had, you know, the last decade or so of not a huge amount happening in this space from the coalition government perspective. So there's a context where I think we do, or at least from my perspective, I'd be very much interested to hear from the two of you. Australia does this terribly. We have a really unintegrated, if that's a word, approach to how we do things, particularly for young children. You know, the system's regulated. The early education, if we just look at the early education system, it's sort of, you know, the funding comes from the feds. It's regulated by the states. There's a preschool agreement here. There's another one over there. But even for things like
the Royal Commission in South Australia.
Yeah, I think people are starting to finally work out that maybe we haven't done this very well. But so I think I do want to start with, I guess, credit for the government for pulling this together and looking at, you know, developing an early years strategy. It is something we see internationally. So the UK has an early years strategy. Scotland, I think, does this really well. So maybe if we just think about it in the broadest possible terms, I think we'll all have some questions about what this will look like in practice. But do we think an early years strategy is a good idea?
You go, Lisa. I can see you busting to talk.
Oh, I wasn't actually. I was waiting to hear what you said. What were you going to say?
I'm happy to go and say what I think. I think an early years strategy is a fantastic idea, and I think it is very important that it takes an approach that is integrated. So I think we always, you know, as soon as we think of early years strategies, we start thinking of early childhood education. But of course, there are so many considerations in the early years for children, for their families and for the community. So I think that that is something that I would urge all educators to, and leaders in the field. Obviously, I don't need to really, you know, urge people to do anything in particular, but to think about it in an integrated way and think about all of the other elements that have an impact on their work in education, and think about how those how they coalesce, and what are the other factors that we need to support the work that we do in early childhood education. So I think, you know, when I was reading it, I feel like we take a big role in education in this integrated care of children and understanding their complex life circumstances and the complex interactions with other parts of the community. So it is a wonderful idea if we can get a strategy that actually integrates those and draws those together. And I've noticed that there's the idea that we need to, you know, imagine new imaginings. I don't know that we need to do new imaginings. I think we need to just try and work out how all the old imaginings work together.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with almost everything you said there. One of the Professor Frank Oberclade tweeted something this morning, and it was the best tweet I'd seen on the issue, because today is actually, as we're recording this at the moment in Canberra, they're having a summit about the strategy, and so lots of people are tweeting about it. But his tweet really impacted me. It said, advocacy takes a long time to bear fruit, and given how long he's been an advocate for, it sure does. Need persistence and to maintain effort and optimism. Now we have PM, Treasurer and all relevant ministers calling for a national focus on early childhood. Now, a Look, I agree totally, and I think it'll be a wonderful thing, but I'm finding it very hard to be optimistic in my cynical 60s, because we, you know, like, even if you think of things like the national partnerships of 10 years ago and the wonderful words at the beginning of those, or at the principles of the NQF, and I know they're not as wide as an early years strategy, but wonderful words can be put on paper and not change a thing. And even I think some of the things that I'm not hearing talked about in a national early years strategy, which I think are vitally important, things like the design and construction of our cities, which is essentially anti-children, our workforce requirements for parents, which are inherently anti-children. You know, the fact that, you know, I could go on with a million things, but, you know, they're looking at things like maternal health and, you know, early education and care and, you know, the early, like, health in the early years and Aboriginal disadvantage, et cetera, you know, are all very important to look at, but I don't think that that's wide enough to make sure that every child in Australia actually has a wonderful childhood and a great start to life.
Do you think we need to develop a strategy on how people have a better attitude to children, maybe?
Yeah, well, I think that's part of it, that, you know, like, children are seen primarily in this country as an impediment to work, to, you know, women's in particular workforce. So they're an impediment to capitalism. You know, nobody's looking about things like, you know, that so many children are in poverty. And I know that this is, you know, supposed to be looking at those things, but, you know, 1 in 5 children start school vulnerable and 1 in 6 children live in poverty. How can you possibly develop an early years strategy unless you're also looking at what we're doing about social security, about, you know, what we're doing about, a bunch of other things like male violence against women, which so often impacts on children. Have I depressed everyone there?
No, I totally agree. I was waiting for Liam to jump in and I was just looking there and thinking, you must have many things to say, Liam. I agree. I mean, I think it is even just the presence of children that kind of concerns people at times, that they're present and that they're inconvenient, but I think there's you know, particular attitudes to children and women that we really struggle with in Australia, and we need to change that. I totally agree with you, Lisa.
Good.
That's right, we're back on track. Yes, I was listening very intently there. I agree with both of you, as I always do, because you're both very smart and intelligent and clever. And it will be interesting to see this government. So there's probably a few things I'm thinking of. This government seems willing to engage with broad questions, at least. What we know is that, you know, the politics is kind of the art of what's possible. There are always compromises, and we'll never be 100% happy with where we land on a whole range of stuff. But I have been, and it's interesting, but, you know, even if we just think about this podcast, but even going back a few years, you know, we've had so long of a conservative government that regardless of whatever your political views are, I just think this was not interested in engaging with big social questions like that. But it seems like even just, you know, having governments willing to engage on those questions, it's a really interesting point, Lisa, around, you know, the broadness around how children are viewed. And the fact that so many things impact on them in a specific and contextual way. I've got to try and talk about this in some way without sounding like the most boring thing in the world. I'm talking from Canberra, and I'm going to talk about, you know, government, an endless government consultation process around changing how they do contracts to community service organisations. But unfortunately, it's just taking up a lot of our time. But the ACT government is undergoing what they're calling the commissioning process, which is this big review of how they sort of fund grants and contracts and tenders. One of the things that's come up many, many times during feedback, not least because the CEO of the organisation I work at has been doing a huge job of raising it, is that children are just kind of invisible in that process. Mm. So a whole bunch of these, a whole bunch of programs around things like domestic and family violence and housing and homelessness are funded, and children either just aren't referred to at all, or are just like an add-on to the adults in their lives, most often the women. And as you said, Lisa, most often viewed as an inconvenience, as something to be like they're often listed as a barrier to success.
Something that the state can protect by expecting the mother to protect them.
Exactly. And
but Liam, I think that that point you're making is so interesting about the presence of children in stuff that's supposed to do with children. And when I, many, many years ago, I made this commitment to myself that if I was ever in any policy meetings or whatever level or wherever I was, if we were talking about children and we hadn't mentioned the word children, I was going to put it forward. And I couldn't believe how many times, and I still can't believe how many times I still have to do it in you know, actually saying, are children present in what you have presented to us? Are they actually named here? And until we do that, we just are not going to be in a good place.
Absolutely. And, you know, full credit to, you know, the CEO here at Northside, who, you know, my role here at Northside involves advocacy, and a lot of that's just writing various things because that's what I've got a good at. But you know, I do think the real advocacy has been in meetings where exactly kind of like that, Leanne. It's just if it wasn't being brought up by people like Anna and others in the sector, just it would never be talked about. Mm. And particularly one of the challenges is that I think it's really hard for people to see, particularly in sort of social policy decision making, to see that the effects and the impacts on children are actually specific and contextual to children. They actually need an individual response. So domestic and family violence is a really important one here. So we do housing responses here at Northside for women and children who have experienced domestic and family violence. All of the funding is tied to the woman, the mother involved. And to be really clear, we're not suggesting that should be diluted or taken away, but the effects on the woman and the effect on the child are often different. They will have experienced trauma in specific and contextual ways, but there's no specific funding or support provided to the child. They're just kind of tagging along with, you know, the woman. And it's not to say that people aren't doing amazing work, but you know what we know about the experiences of trauma in the first 5 years. But you know, just witnessing violence or being subjected to violence has a particular and different impact that needs to be tackled. But I think they're really difficult discussions for people. And I think we've just had this sort of, it's just been kind of lumped together into one category for so long. And that's why things like, you know, a broad early year strategy, I think, can go some way if it's, you know, if that's the kind of advocacy that's being raised, is that we can look at, well, it's not just about having, you know, how do we, and obviously I look at our bias will be early education, but it's not just how do we have a better early education system or how do we have a better, you know, prenatal thing, but how does children impact on all those other things? What are the experiences of children who are homeless? What are the experiences of children who can't access medical care? The experience of children who are refugees and asylum seekers? I think that to me is almost like, bizarrely, it would be interesting to see the earlier strategy, not just looking inward, the success might be, can it be, you know, go across the whole of government? But then we might be talking about mad things like ministers for children, which should obviously be a crazy idea.
Well, I think that's a really good point. And there's a couple of things that are coming to mind as you're saying those things. Is first of all, when we're talking about, you know, children having that presence, we need to go back to the rights of the child and, you know, what we actually know to be those rights and that have been embedded in charters. So that's something really important, and I think it's a great point, Liam, that we can't talk about everybody around the child without actually really making sure that we're seeing the child as, you know, with agency and having those rights. But when you said about the Minister for Children. I think this is where the optimism maybe comes from, Lisa. I'm gonna push you a little bit on this, because I feel the same way when I see, you know, another strategy, another framework, those things. However, when I think about how far we've come in terms of having this focus on the early years, having ministers who are dedicated to early childhood education and who are, you know, sympathetic to the cause, and that we actually have come a long way in Australia with regard to some of our work around children within early childhood education and educators, not far enough. But I do want to reflect on that kind of iterative sort of progress, I suppose, in terms of where we're at compared to, say, 20, 30 or 40 years ago.
For sure. One of the things that worries me about it, and I won't, you know, I acknowledge that optimism that this is new, and I acknowledge the excitement of having, you know, we've got two very strong women ministers leading this, both with strong personal stories of early education care, much less of being single, or in one case being a single mother, you know, like the whole, they understand a lot more about children than perhaps other people, you know, do. So I think that that is a cause for optimism. One of the things that really distresses me is that we have such a muddle out there, and I'm not just talking about early education and care, I'm talking about across the board, that, you know, that we don't begin to understand how families can access systems, how they can understand systems, how they can, you know, understand what it is, what their role is as a parent of a very young child, and how they can set that young child up for life. And I'm not just talking about, you know, people who face socioeconomic disadvantage or informational disadvantage. I'm talking about, you know, highly educated and articulate and rich white women who also can't work out how to get their children what they need, because it's everything is super siloed. And I think one of the things that that the strategy is doing right is looking at how to break down those silos between, you know, health and education and what we're doing for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children in this country, and try and make it a bit more accessible.
Definitely. Well, it might be worth thinking about, because I think we've had a good chat about sort of context there. And I think we've probably already strayed into this question already, but what would we like to see in sort of the end result of an early year strategy? I think the guidance is really clear that this is, and they actually refer to this as the start of a conversation, which is always bureaucratic talk for don't expect too much out of it. It will be a while until we get a final version. But you know, maybe from each of you, maybe starting with Leanne, what kind of things would you like to see in an early years strategy when we finally get it?
I think that I want to keep a focus on regional and remote areas of Australia, and the way that children are given opportunities and families have access to services and, you know, good health, good maternal health, all of those things that relate to children and their well-being and their health. So I'm just going to sort of keep that focus and keep talking about that. In terms of what it should contain, and this was, I had a bit of fun with this, as the both of you know, with the with AI and getting AI to actually develop a strategy rather than having a big group develop it. And so I asked ChatGPT to develop a 10-point early years strategy.
And it did so well.
It really did very well. It only did 9 points because I think it ran out of brain power at that point. But the thing,
I know how it feels.
What I did notice was how present early childhood education was in that. I think it took up four of nearly five, actually, of ChatGPT's strategy points, whether it was actually about the provision of education or whether it was about bringing families and community into to education. And so I think that's one thing that I really want to be sure about, because there's always all of these priorities about what's good for children and what we can provide for families. But let's not lose that focus on early childhood education and the benefits of it that we do know exist. And many people try to keep telling us they don't exist, but we know that they do. High quality early childhood education can make a difference for children. Even ChatGPT says so. So I really just want to make sure that we don't.
ChatGPT says it's in
advance. Well, as they say about ChatGPT, it's AI hallucinating, which is, This is good what it's hallucinating about. But I think even with all of the considerations which I talked about at the beginning in terms of think about all of the other elements of childhood and families, I still really want to keep that focus on early childhood education.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's important too. But I'd like to see something radically different. I'd like to see a strategy that outlined the problems and then just had like a one or two line solution, which was a solution that would actually work within government, which is the one that Liam suggested of, you know, having a minister for children who had the right to look at all legislation and look at its impact, for children. And have the right to look at all existing programs and see how they can be better joined up and less siloed.
That would be very exciting. I know that breaking down silos in government is just one of those, what do they call it? It's a wicked problem.
It is, though, isn't it?
I know. But look, every strategy that ever comes out has that as a goal. I don't know if any of them ever succeeded, but I think, yeah, we've probably got a better shot now than we would have had, you know, a few years ago.
Well, look, I can tell you the first thing that has to happen. One level of government has to take responsibility for early education and care. We currently have state governments who are trialing programs and who are designing funding programs that are impacting on children's lives negatively. And I've said that publicly and been shouted down about it. But if I see one more child being forced to go to both a preschool and a long daycare centre in New South Wales because that's the way it's cheaper for families, now I'm going to scream, because that's never good for children. That's never good for children. And I've had all these advocates in this sector saying, oh, but my children did it and it was fine. And as much as I hear that and as much as I applaud those women, because they're working women that have had to find solutions in an imperfect system that works for them, it doesn't work for children. And if we dared to say that a school child should go to a private school and a public school, you know, at the same time, people would instantly see what was wrong with that.
Yeah, I agree, Lisa, and I think it's the it's actually about putting children at the centre of it, isn't it? You know, as you say, it's not good for children, and people say, well, I did it, but was that actually like a good? Was that good?
Was that, yeah, and that's, I was a single mother, but do I think that was necessarily good for children? No, I think they need more than one person's input in their life. Yeah.
But this is where we have, this is where it's more strategy around the bigger picture and the community, rather than it just being about a service, because it is about having those considerations about what children actually need and how we can support that, and make the other things work around it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Great points from both of you. My suggestion is to get it a bit more, I'm thinking less about outcomes, because I think I suspect ChatGPT is probably not too far off the mark in terms of, we'll have to add it to it when I post this episode, Leanne, maybe we can add that as a screenshot or something and people can read it. But it definitely knows how to speak government bureaucrat very well. So I think
you should tweet it, Leanne, because it really, I was rolling on the floor laughing when I read it.
But yes. I suspect we would be able to guess in broad strokes what we come up with. What I'm interested in is that kind of discussion we've had about early education being one piece of the puzzle here. And I think it's really hard for those of us who work in this sector with the challenges and the, you know, so frankly, the injustices about how the sector is treated and about how things are going, that we do focus just on ourselves. But I actually think what I would love to see in the strategy is that the experiences of educators and centre directors are really prioritised and sort of centred in the development of the strategy. And I think that's actually a way of keeping children at the centre, because I do, and again, people can, you know, this is obviously a bias, but I do just think, you know, those professionals who work in the sector are so central to that, you know, that sort of nexus of a child's life in their community. You know, Bronfred Brenner's, you know, big circles of community going out there. I do think that educators and directors and leaders in the sector are so central to that, but are just not acknowledged or valued, certainly not paid or respected for that. And I would love to, you know, I always sort of say, you know, children will access, you know, a doctor or a nurse occasionally, though they, if they're lucky, they might be able to go and see a specialist on something. They're in early childhood centres with these amazing professionals, you know, at least every week, some of them 5 days a week. I think educators have such a knowledge of what's important for children. And often, you know, again, this might be controversial, Lisa, it's not only you that are allowed to say controversial things. I actually think they may have a better view than families. I think if we just focus on what families want for children, we'll get things like what's the most flexible option or what's cheapest. I actually think, you know, educators have a much more well-rounded view of what's important for children, the struggles they face, the challenges they have in accessing, you know, particular services and those kind of things. If I think about educators, you know, working with, you know, specialists coming into centres and working on service inclusion plans, I would just love to, so there isn't a particular line or something I want to see in the strategy, but I would love to get to the end and go, do you know what, the profession that we learnt the most from and what we realised was so integral to young children was the early education profession. That would be pretty amazing for me.
Yeah, I reckon I can support that.
I think that's a great idea, Liam. Would you like to start an interest group to do that?
A subcommittee of something? Oh, yeah, I'll work on that. I'll get ChatGPT to write the terms of reference?
Terms of reference.
That's all right. All right. Well, I guess we can sort of wrap up by saying, look, hope this conversation has been helpful. We've gone quite big picture, but I think that's good for something like the early years strategy. I think our strong encouragement, again, a big part of this podcast is advocacy and activism. So taking part in these things when they come up is critical. So I would very much recommend we'll have a link to the early years strategy website where they're sort of hosting all the consultation options on that site where people can take part. We wish best of luck to everyone at the Early Years Summit, you know, probably literally 10 kilometres away from where I'm recording right now. We weren't asked to be the official media partner of the National Early Years Summit. That's a shame. I'll have to work on that. But they probably didn't know we were back, to be fair. So that's all right. I'll follow that up. But you can provide a feedback via a survey. So that's probably the simplest and easiest way to provide your own feedback on the government's proposed early childhood strategy.
That's really easy. I agree. Yes. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I also think there's not a lot of depth that you can provide there. So it's So it's just one kind of method, isn't it?
That's right. But if you're time pressured or just want to do something that kind of walks you through the consultation, that's probably the way to do it. And that has to be done by the 3rd of March. So very much recommend people get onto that when they can. There is also a discussion paper available, and you can do a public submission on that basis by the 30th of April. That'll be very interesting to see what, submissions are made by organisations and advocates and leaders in the space. So that's the early years strategy. We'll be tracking that during the year. One of the things we thought coming back to more regular episodes was a bit of a feature that I've certainly missed. We stopped for a while, but I think that's just because it was more homework for us. But we wanted to sort of end each episode with a bit of recommendation of something to read. It might be something to read or watch or listen to, or just something to go and track down while you're desperately waiting the fortnight before another episode of this podcast drops. And it could be related to the topic we've just talked about. It could be something completely different. It might not even be related to early education. It's just something we think people should go and have a look at. Leanne, what are you recommending people go and track down?
I knew you were going to ask me, and I did have it up here. It is, hold on, it's actually been produced in Western Australia, because it's always important to remember our Western colleagues, because they do early childhood education differently. And it's actually the Aboriginal Cultural Standards Framework. And this was recommended to me as something to consider when we are looking at culturally responsive workplaces and what the competencies, I guess, I don't like to say competencies, but, you know, where we sit on a kind of sort of scale of being culturally aware and culturally responsive. And it was developed in partnership with the schools and the early childhood education sector. So it is called the Aboriginal Cultural Standards Framework.
That sounds great. I'll have to check that out. Ooh. I haven't heard of that one.
Me too.
Excellent. All right. Lisa, what are you sending our way?
Explain to me the difference between cultural competency and cultural awareness. What's the new word in the ELF?
Are you asking me this, or are you asking? I think you should ask Liam. Well, I think
cultural safety, I think they're referring to.
Because we had cultural competence when the framework first came out, and that was very hard for people to understand, wasn't it? It was a really, I remember that being very challenging. But on this particular, in this document, it's it moves from cultural awareness to cultural responsiveness, being, you know, emerging as cultural awareness and cultural responsiveness is proficient. And I suppose the way I see those things is what your understandings are, what your kind of knowledge is, and then the responsiveness is how you actually, you know, after doing some other things, how you actually apply that and how you are responsive. So it's the doing. And in between there's the awareness, so you know it's there. There's understanding, competence, so that's what's in this document, and then responsiveness, and competence being capable, but responsiveness being proficient. So I suppose, sorry, that was a lot of weasel words to say that one is about knowing and the other is about actually doing.
Okay. That sounds like a good thing.
Thanks, Leanne. Lisa, what are you sending our way?
Look, I'm really struggling here. I can't think of anything. I think, you know, like I'm having a bit of a problem with words at the moment. There's so many words thrown at so many things, you know. I'm personally researching a lot about, you know, neoliberalism and early education and care at the moment. And so I'm deep into a Peter Moss book about that, and going back over some old Margaret Sim stuff and stuff.
Wow.
What are we doing that episode?
I must sound like an academic or something, don't I? But I think I need background knowledge on why this shit is bad, rather than just saying, you know, like profit and children don't mix. Hmm. You know, which I'm more than happy to say ad nauseum, but I need, you know. So anyway, so my recommendation is read about neoliberalism and early childhood education and care.
Nice.
That's always good advice.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
My recommendation would be for people to check out the From the Heart website, so the Yes campaign for the referendum on the Voice to Parliament will launch next week as we're recording this in Adelaide. We've been talking a lot about it here at Northside and just in the wider community. This is such an important year. We don't often, I think, get the chance to change the constitution, but, you know, take a significant step forward.
And we don't often take the opportunity.
No, we don't. That's right. We don't. I don't want to suggest anything to, you know, the people either recording this podcast with me or maybe listening, but, you know, I didn't get the chance to vote in the 1999 referendum on the Republic. Was slightly too young.
Oh, neither did Lisa and I, Liam.
No, we obviously not. That's young. Right. So we finally get to vote in a referendum. So this is very exciting for me personally. Really?
Sorry, were you really too young to vote on that?
I was too young. Sorry, Lisa.
Jesus.
sorry. So definitely wore the shirts though, and and was very excited by the idea.
You but also vote on the marriage equality.
Yes, Lisa, I did get to vote. I did get
that
to vote
was only
on
a few years ago.
I know, but who knows how young he is?
Yeah, well, Liam turned 18 in 2018, so.
Oh, right.
Close enough. But I think the connection, you know, in terms of what we're talking about an early strategy and out, we know that outcomes for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children are best served by the solutions coming from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and having a voice in the decision. What a shock. It's almost like there's a whole bunch of research around that. But so that is the connection there. But also if we look at, you know, the early years learning framework version 2.0, it has a much stronger emphasis on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander perspectives and social justice. So I just think this is not we talk a lot about, you know, in the sector, there's this view that, you know, we should keep politics and everything out of centres. I could not disagree with that more, but I think this issue in particular just is central to the work we do with children. And it's just such a important opportunity for us to show leadership. And if we're talking about, you know, centering the voices of First Nations people, you know, in our curriculum, surely that has to mean supporting, you know, a yes vote on the voice to parliament. So check out fromtheheart.com.au. There's a lot of different ways to take part and be part. And yeah, it's a very, this feels like it's a very exciting opportunity this year to be doing.
Oh, definitely. Much better recommendations than my waffly one.
I think you'll probably find something that you can recommend next time on your very topic, Lisa. That could be your, you know, the dummy's guide to neoliberalism. How about that?
Oh, God.
I don't know whether there is one.
No.
At least you could write one.
Yes.
All right. Well, for the first time in a very, very long time, I can end this episode by saying we'll be back again in a fortnight with another episode.
Wow.
Very exciting.
Thanks, Liam, for listening, everyone.
Thank you once again from Leanne and I for doing all the hard work of actually putting our words out.
Yes. Liam, thank you, because we just turn up.
Yeah.
You do the hard yards.
You might be a young'un, but you're a good un.
Well, that's very much appreciated, both of you. Thank you. I'm going to cut that out, though, so don't worry about it.
Oh, leave it in.